Okay, thanks for joining me, everyone. Charles Moskowitz here. I do go live Monday through Friday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and I was scheduled to have Jay Dyer come on with me today from Esoteric Hollywood. I think Jay and I might have had a somewhat of a snafu in terms of communication, so he'll be joining me sometime next week. I have a pretty ambitious lineup today, however, at 2 p.m., I will be joined by David Horowitz from the Horowitz Center, an author of many books. And also at 3 p.m., I'll be joined by Josh Bernstein, who is a very tough and intrepid reporter. He's had his censorship issues, as have we all. And he'll be joining me at 3 p.m., Josh Bernstein Uncensored. But I figured in the meantime, I'd do just a brief a little overview talk and swing open the phone lines. You're welcome to join me at 617-396-4958. That number again is 617-396-4958. Now, as I predicted, and as many people predicted, the big fight this year, and I would suggest the fight that will determine the future of our republic and of our ability to govern ourselves, is going to be voter reform. Now, I want to be careful about how I talk about this because I am on YouTube, and I know that this issue is a little sensitive for some of the YouTube censors. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of in this day and age and in the situation that we're in, we have to weigh and measure those factors, what we can talk about, what we can't talk about. And, you know, we all go forward in life generally, and certainly anyone who does any broadcasting goes forward with a certain degree of self-censorship. I certainly have always exercised those sorts of restraints. But in this heightened atmosphere, where you have national censorship on a more formalized level, it's become much more difficult, and it goes beyond the simple means of preserving community standards, which I believe I do, and it gets into political speech. So having said that, I am going to proceed here, and I'm going to proceed with some caution. Let's just put it that way. I'm not totally free to talk. But so getting back to the subject that I want to discuss, we are indeed facing a huge battle, both under the hood, so to speak, in a way outside of the view of the media and in public, with regard to attempts by the American public. And when I say the American public, I'm talking not just, you know, us, you know, deplorables, the 75 million people who we know voted for Donald Trump, and that's whom we know voted for Trump. I'm talking, you know, independents, well-meaning Democrats, disaffected Democrats, even some liberals, are concerned about the transfer of voter regulation away from its rightful place, where it is to reside constitutionally, and that is with the state legislators and the people who elect state legislators, and on to unelected people or unauthorized people. In the case of the 2020 election, that included secretaries of states, governors, judges. But now, with a new bill before Congress put forth by the radical left, it will nationalize election control. And this is a battle royale because it's shaping up in many states. I think it's going to be a growing number of states. I would hope all 50 states are involved in this. I would hope my own state of Massachusetts gets involved, even though there was no hard evidence in this state or accusations of voter irregularities in the last election. Nevertheless, there were unilateral measures taken by the governor to paper the House, so to speak. under the guise of the COVID emergency. He authorized the simple mailing out blindly of ballots without ballots that had not been requested. That is, look, again, this is not an issue of whether or not that's a legal matter. It is legal. The issue is whether or not that was approved by the state legislature. Article 1, Section 2 of the Constitution clearly says that it is the state legislature that decides and regulates election matters. They decide whether or not ballots should simply be sent out, not the governor, not the Secretary of State, as was happened in Michigan, not judges. And so there are constitutional questions around that. And I think that the founding generation and the founding fathers, in their wisdom, recognized that the state legislature is the best venue to regulate elections, because that's where the will of the people resides. When you elect a local state senator or a local state rep, that person is accessible to you. That's your neighbor. That's somebody who is experiencing many of the same political and social vicissitudes that you experience. That person most closely represents your values and reflects those values and is sent to a state capital as a legislator to regulate those values and to pass laws. And so you have now a movement. What is my thoughts about the Jewish Messiah that has revealed himself in Israel? I'm getting a TikTok here. I know nothing about it. I mean, please send some information. If you want to call in or if you want to email me, charlesmoskowitz@gmail.com, or you're welcome to call 617-396-4958. 617-396-4958. If we have news of a Messiah in Israel, I want to know. Please call 617-396-4958. I know nothing about this, but I'll certainly look into it after the show, and you're welcome to call and talk about it. Anyway, getting back to the issue of elections. So now we have a movement. It's too late for the 2020 election, because we already had situations where state governors, state secretaries of state, and judges unlawfully usurped the powers of the state legislatures and went ahead and passed regulations on election to help benefit Biden, I would argue. And under the guise of the emergency of the COVID-19, which I would suggest was, you know, I mean, again, I mean, even if there was some kind of an impediment to voting, which there really wasn't, because states don't already have absentee ballot laws. And if somebody wants to vote absentee, they can do that. But even putting that aside, if people felt that there was a crisis around voting because of the COVID-19 virus, they ought to have gone to the state legislatures to pass laws. Well, we know that governors, secretaries of states, and judges circumvented state legislators. They did an end run around state legislators, and they passed laws by fiat. We now have a movement by which people in states are taking back their states and saying no to this. Now, the most biggest one right now, the most famous one, if you will, the one that's causing national repercussions, is happening and has happened, I understand, in the state of Georgia, which was a state that I think by any objective standards had very major questions of improprieties during the last election. You had a weakening of the standards for out-of-state ballots being cast. You had people that passed away on the rolls that was their names were still there in the ballots. And that's a recipe for fraud, because when the polls close, you can have corrupt election canvassers and officials filling in the names of anybody that didn't show up to vote. And that includes people who might have died. And we know that happens. I mean, Chris Matthews wrote about this in his book Hardball years ago. He witnessed it growing up in Philadelphia. And I think it's obvious that this happens. In the case of Georgia, there were two counties that sought to clean up their precincts by removing those names, by confirming that people on the list had either passed away or had moved out of state. And they were blocked from doing so by a federal judge by the name of Nancy Gardner Abrams. And Nancy Gardner Abrams is the sister of Stacey Abrams, who has about 27 lawsuits against her organization for voter, quote, improprieties, unquote, and who is involved with a push to register voters that might tend to go beyond conventional means to do so. And you also had a situation in Georgia of voter harvesting, in which case activists would go out and gather votes and choose votes and maybe unchoose certain votes. There were various elements to voter harvesting that bring up questions of impropriety. You also had, you know, no voter ID. You had a weakening of signature verification. You had a weakening of actual vote, you know, the paper the vote was printed on, and whether there was a crease in it, and all these other things going on, you know, shredded votes showing up in dumpsters and church parking lots, you know, people being, in one case, this young man was killed under mysterious circumstances. You know, there's all sorts of stuff going on in Georgia. Not to mention the electronic question of electronic voting. And now the people of Georgia have reasserted their sovereign right through their legislature to end some of these practices and to get a voter ID. And the response by the left-wing establishment, which seeks to subvert those rights, was to claim that this attempt was motivated by people who have something against Black men and women, which is a lie. And it's becoming more obvious that it was a lie. This, you know, the idea of protecting the vote from fraud is one that protects the votes of all the people of that state, regardless of their ethnic background, number one. Number two, voter suppression happens when a real vote is weakened by and countered by a fake vote. That's suppression. That vote was suppressed, regardless of the racial background of any of the person who cast the real vote. And number three, their attempt to make this claim it's becoming more obvious to people, is itself racist. Because what they're saying is that people of color are somehow less capable of registering to vote than white people, which is obviously a lie. And the people who are saying this obviously either don't know people of color or they don't care. They're using them as an excuse, as cannon fodder in their agenda to codify a compromised form of voting. I mean, obviously, people of color are just as capable of registering to vote as everyone else. They are just as capable of presenting ID as anyone else. I mean, here I'm getting a TikTok. You need an ID to literally do anything important in life. Yeah, exactly. You need an ID to buy a pack of cigarettes or get like groceries in some cases. I mean, we all need ID. I mean, the idea that somehow people of color don't have IDs is ridiculous and it's racist. It's in a way, it's sort of like, as I've said, an old-fashioned imperialistic British form of racism that might have been covered by Rudyard Kipling, you know, the white man's burden, right? You're a better man than I, Gunga Din. I mean, you know, this kind of paternalistic, liberal view of people of color. It's racist and it's insulting and it's offensive. Not only that, but there's a new poll out now by Rasmussen, which indicates it's about 70% of the African-American community rejects this argument. They say that we certainly can, and we certainly do, and we certainly are able to register to vote. Let me just see here. Rasmussen reports, a majority of Black voters, 73%, believe voter ID is necessary to ensure a fair and secure election process. The survey asked the question, are laws requiring voters to show photo identification, such as a driver's license, before being allowed to vote necessary to a fair and secure election process? 70% of African-American respondents said yes. So, you know, that's more than a majority. Anyway, so the response and the result from the Georgia reasserting its right to regulate its vote was interesting from the position of the biggest businesses in that state, namely Coca-Cola, Delta Airlines, and I think Home Depot, if I'm not mistaken, in that they threatened to, they came out and condemning this vote. And that was followed up by the National Baseball League, which decided to become political. And they canceled the All-Star game, moving it to Atlanta, moving it to Denver, a predominantly white city, by the way, from Atlanta, a very successful, predominantly Black city, all under the guise that they bought into this idea that Georgia was somehow doing something that had something against Black people. And this is really troubling. And it brought up a question that, actually was brought up by Jeff Cooner at WRKO, and I think it's worth my repeating. I mentioned this on Wednesday on the program. And that is that the big tech, you know, Google, Facebook, Twitter, all these guys, YouTube, every one of them, are developing social scoring for businesses. And they'll get to people too, if this is true. George Gilder, who is one of America's most respected intellectuals and who spent several years in China, I think on a mission as part of during the Bush administration, wrote a book recently, and I heard him interviewed about this, where he said that China is involved with establishing social scores for their citizens. In other words, if you have if your social score, and they keep track of it through smartphones, and they spy on people, basically, like they always did, but now they do it using high tech. And if your social score is not sufficient, then you're denied rights. I mean, you can't go out to certain places. You can't even get food in certain situations. You can't, you don't, you know, your freedoms are further restricted. Whereas if your social score is high, then you are on the inside and you get extra privileges. And George Gilder, in this interview, said that this is going to happen in the United States because Google and all these companies who want to do business in China and who make compromises to do so eventually are going to implement this system in the United States. And I mean, at the time, I was like, oh my God, that never could happen here. I mean, I heard this interview several years ago. I'm like, this is horrifying. How could this happen in America? Well, according to Jeff Cooner, and I think he's a pretty good source, this is what this is about with regard to big businesses in this country, like Coca-Cola and Delta. They are responding to a social scoring that has three parts. E, S, and G. E stands for environment. S stands for social justice or socialism. And G stands for governance. And they get rated on all three of these things in terms of how left-wing they are. And so they, the further left they are, the higher their rating, in which case they get more prominence in SROs on Google, and they get, you know, better placement and more praise and more clicks and more visits and more praises and more likes and more this and more that. And if they place low on the scale, like I probably do, because my YouTube channel has been demonetized and it has been, it's been shadow banned, I've been told, then they get very little privileges. And, you know, look, I can assure you from having been in politics myself that politicians love to see their big fat face on television, and they like to see their name in the paper. They like to get reporters calling, giving them interviews, being asked questions about what they think about X, Y, and Z. You get almost a messianic complex. You start to think you're important, right? And to have this taken away is a devastating thing. You become invisible. You know, in many cases, these people are a narcissist and are psychopaths, and they lose their sense of existence if they're not on television, or if they're not heard. And that includes conservatives, by the way. We're not just talking left-wingers. And so there is, as a result, and it's a psychological thing, that people do make compromises, and they do trim their sails in terms of taking a moral stand, or a stand that may not agree with this fascistic clique that consistently runs and controls the means of communication, because they don't want to get a lower score. And so they kowtow to it. And that is why, and Jeff Kuhner was speculating on it. He didn't state it as fact, but I think it's very plausible and most likely. That is why big companies like Coca-Cola and Delta Airlines are calling for a boycott of Georgia, and why Major League Baseball, of all things, would close down the All-Star game in Atlanta. You know, baseball is now political. We can no longer, you know, traditionally we would look to baseball and football and basketball and our sports as a place where we could get away from politics, where we could enjoy some, that's why they call it the national pastime. You know, we can enjoy some recreation and get together where you have people from all political persuasions, all walks of life, join together and enjoy a game. You know, I think even like in Israel, there's an example, like with the Super Bowl, Americans, you know, who emigrated to Israel, love the Super Bowl. And every year they rent out this ballroom in a big hotel in Tel Aviv. And you have Israeli Jews from America getting together with kosher hot dogs and beer so they can watch the Super Bowl. And it includes people who generally would never get together. Ultra-Orthodox Jews wearing payuses and black clothes are together with very secular, non-religious Jews, who people would never rub shoulders, but they all come together because they put aside their beliefs of the day and their politics so that they can watch a football game. That's what sports is all about. It's a chance for people to have a good time. You know, just be Americans for the day. And the fact that the baseball league has stepped into politics, it's just, to me, it's like a desecration. And on a more practical level, don't they realize that they've offended 75 million Americans who voted for President Trump? 75 million Americans at least, let's just put it that way. I mean, I don't get it, but I think that that's why I'm mentioning this, that Jeff Kuhn's speculation about the social scores as being a very major contributing factor to this development. Anyway, let me give out the number. I'm not going to stay on much longer. I've got two big guests coming up today, David Horowitz and Josh Bernstein. They'll be on with me at 2 p.m. and at 3 p.m. respectively, Eastern Standard Time. 617-396-4958. If you'd like to join the conversation, 617-396-4958. Now, I want to just finish up a little bit on my exposition regarding people in the respective states taking back their right to regulate voting, largely in response to some of the improprieties that occurred in the last election. It's too late for that now. But although there is this recount in Maricopa County, Arizona, that we ought to keep an eye on, you know, the 1.2 million ballots have been sequestered and are being fully audited there. I actually have some, I'm not filled with hope over that because the powers that be out there are pretty corrupt and they're determined to stop this. There have been bags of shredded votes showing up in garbage bins. There have been really ridiculous accusations made against people who are carrying this out, that they're quote unquote conspiracy theorists and even insurrectionists. Yeah, I would suggest that, hey, they're trying to find out if there was a conspiracy. Let's have the account and see whether or not there was a conspiracy. We don't know that. We never are going to know it either because of their efforts to prevent us from knowing it. And if they want to throw out that accusation, well, here's a chance to find out. Anyway, you know, I'm hopeful. I'm watching it. Let's keep an eye on Maricopa County, Arizona. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, it doesn't look great. But there are changes afoot there. And the other breaking news, there are only two other stories that I'll mention. And then I think I'm going to wish you all a wonderful afternoon. The state of Michigan, finally, obviously too late, but a state judge finally came down with a ruling saying that the Secretary of State of Michigan, Jocelyn Benson, was not operating lawfully when she changed voter laws before the election that basically weakened the standards of signature checking for absentee ballots. Now, the legislature had passed a law probably 20 years ago, basically a sensible law saying that if somebody requests an absentee ballot, they get the absentee ballot and that the clerk has a signature on file that they check with the absentee ballot when it's mailed back in to make sure that the person mailing in their ballot was the same person as the one that originally registered to vote. Now, Massachusetts, I think, has some pretty good laws around that, you know, but Michigan, apparently this Secretary of State decided to throw that out, right? And again, we're talking about, in this case, a very partisan liberal left Democrat, that being Jocelyn Benson, who was helped in her election by the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a very left-wing organization. So she says, no, we don't need to do that anymore. She simply signs a decree. Instead, if the signature even remotely resembles, vaguely, I think is the word they use, the signature on file, then we have to let that go through. Who gets to decide that? That's a good question. I mean, I would assume a local corrupt clerk. And by the way, that raises a bigger question too. And that is that on absentee ballots, and I don't know the answer to this, I think it probably varies by the state, but on absentee ballots, And I'm not even talking about these massive papering of the House under the guise of the COVID emergency, where unsolicited ballots were sent out, including in Massachusetts. Exactly how is it that these votes are confirmed once they're received? Who counts them? How are they counted? Is there accountability with regard to the counting of those votes? I don't know the answer to that. Maybe somebody listening right now knows. Anyway, a local state judge, that this was challenged by the state legislature, and finally, 3 months after the election, a local state judge has stepped in and said that that's not constitutional. It runs against the state constitution. It actually runs against the federal constitution, because only the state legislator has the authority to make such a law, or to end a law, or to change a law. And so she's been defeated. Now she's being called to testify before the state house in Michigan, and she's refusing. I don't go there. I'm not going, because the people that run the state legislatures are all a bunch of terrorists and insurrectionists and right wingers and conspiracy theorists. So I'm not going. All right. That's the kind of arrogance we're dealing with. But the point is that we need to accept victories where they occur. And this was a victory, even though it's very, very late in the day, unfortunately. And the third one I want to bring up, I brought up Georgia, I brought up Michigan, is that yesterday I got news that in Pennsylvania, a judge, a state judge, has just come in response to a lawsuit from state legislators, and is allowing for the removal of 21,000 names, which are on ballots, of people who had passed away. 21,000. We're not talking about a few numbers here. 21,000. So the question, those names are finally being taken off the rolls. That should be done in all 50 states, all the time. Every year they should do a full audit of the registered voters to find out if there's anything there that's not right. And it raises the question that I raised earlier, which is, will there now be done an audit in that state to try to trace whether or not those 21,000 votes had been cast? Again, we're talking about people who are no longer with us. Did they come back from the dead? Were those votes cast on election day? I don't know. I'd like to know. There certainly should damn well be an audit on that. So those talk about Hunter Biden. What can you say? The FBI pretended there was no laptop for almost a year. All of a sudden, after the election and after their guy is safely ensconced, they then released the fact that there was a laptop. And during the election in October, when people brought up the laptop and all of its corrupt things on that laptop, which showed collusion with foreign powers, it showed things like, pay to play and, kickbacks and all kinds of other stuff, not to mention the gross and disgusting personal pictures of Hunter Biden. When this was brought up during the election in October, you had the entire liberal left media, and it shows how much they control the media. They responded by claiming that this was Russian disinformation, which was a lie. We now know that was not true. They do have the laptop, and it does have all that stuff on it. And it'll probably eventually will work its way, and it will catch up to the Bidens, I would imagine, and maybe that will end up with President Harris. I don't know. But I'm not ready to speculate on that. Nobody knows. What we do know, though, is that there was a cover-up that went on for almost a year. And by the way, that same cover-up would have exonerated President Trump during one of those phony impeachment hearings, the one with the perfect phone call, when in fact, Biden himself had done, according to, video, exactly what Trump was being accused of doing. anyway, and by the way, there's some new video that's just come out with Biden that further confirms that. So I don't know. Do I have time? I guess I have time for one, a phone call if anybody would like to call in and comment. 617-396-4958. 617-396-4958. Again, I've got two big shows coming up. Big show coming up today at 2 and 3 p.m. David Horowitz and Josh Bernstein. I'm rescheduling Jay Dyer for next week. I'll let you know. Looking forward to that. The author of Esoteric Hollywood. And I got a bunch of other things coming up next week. So please stay tuned for all of that. Please subscribe to my YouTube channel. I'd appreciate that. And subscribe on TikTok if you're watching on TikTok. And my books are available at Amazon Books, Charles Moskowitz. Just put my name in the server and up they come. Anyway, thanks for watching, everyone. Charles Moskowitz, signing off. God bless America. God bless all of you. Thank you.